This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
COVID-19 and risks to businesses. I'm talking today with Bill Holden, Senior VP, Executive Liability Division Leader for the Liberty Company Insurance Brokers. Bill brings over 35 years of commercial lines and product line experience and joined the Liberty Company Insurance Brokers in 2021. Bill brings a wealth of underwriting, brokerage, and client advocacy experience to clients. Having worked with all lines of insurance, Bill understands how to craft a placement that fits neatly with the rest of the property and casualty program to create a better enterprise risk approach. Bill, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. On this subject, risk to businesses in light of COVID-19. I know it's a big subject covering employment issues related risks, supply chain disruptions, transparency with companies. But to start out, can you walk us through some of the employment related risks?
Sure. I think what we're seeing arising out of COVID probably augments or exaggerates a lot of the issues that we have seen historically in employment-related risks. And I think a lot of it arises out of a lot of confusion that has really arisen during the pandemic. For example, 2 years ago, when we all started the pandemic, we were watching the stock market collapse 13,000 points in the month of February. And then in March, we had to pivot and start looking at how we were going to run our businesses remotely. And the shelter-in-place confusion certainly created a lot of questions. Companies didn't really know what they were required to do and very quickly started laying off employees or furloughing employees in order to try and keep their businesses alive. One of the questions that they had to deal with was the WARN Act. Workers' Adjustment and Retraining Notification requires the companies that are either laying off a percentage of their employees or closing facilities have to give 60 days notice, but there is an aspect of the WARN Act that says if there is a national emergency, they don't necessarily have to provide that warning. So that seemed to go away, but the PPP monies and the monies that the government did provide created more confusion because a lot of it was put together to create and retain benefits and salaries at certain percentages. As we started to move, everybody was hoping that this would be over, gosh, in 2 weeks or 2 months, and we're 2 years later, and the return to work has created even more confusion. The federal government tried to impose a mask mandate, which was thrown out of the court system, and OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Hazard Association, withdrew their mask mandates for the federal government employees. Local laws vary from one city to the next and one county to the next, and even state laws in the state of California, for example. Governor Newsom put a mask mandate on again, and law enforcement started to refuse to enforce this. There was a lot of pushback. And therefore, more suits arose out of the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates. And I think that led to a lot of different risks. There was a surge in lawsuits resulting from employment-related COVID claims. For example, this morning I read an article from Bloomberg that in 2020 alone there were 4,200 employment-related COVID suits. And they were addressing things like wrongful termination, discrimination based on religion or based on health and harassment. Businesses began suffering for need for employees. You can't go to a store or a restaurant or virtually anything without seeing the sign, "We're hiring," on the door. And in the holiday season, airlines started canceling hundreds and hundreds of flights, leaving thousands, if not millions, of people stranded because they didn't have enough employees to staff their flights. We started seeing a lot of turnover with the employees. We're in what has been dubbed the Great Resignation, and employees who are no longer happy with their employment situation will just quit and go to a different job because they know there's other organizations willing to hire. This is driving up employment costs. You have to train employees when you hire them and retrain employees when they leave, and you have to go out and hire again. And a lot of employees don't want to wear the masks, so they quit if there is some kind of a mask mandate. There's a lot of confusion on whether to return to the workplace or work remotely, or even a combination or a hybrid of the two. One large organization, Apple, has a beautiful campus up in the Bay Area for their employees and said, "We're going to bring all our employees back." And many of these employees either said, "We don't necessarily want to come back into the office environment. We don't like commuting. We don't like some of the mask mandates and concerns." Or a lot of them had moved out of state to find more affordable housing and said that they didn't want to come back to work. So now organizations really have to start looking at their commercial real estate and figuring out what to do. Many companies are consolidating their offices, creating hotel space and hotel offices for people to come in on an occasional basis, and really trying to find ways to allow their employees to work remotely. They will even pay benefits like increased costs for data usage and phones. And this is forcing commercial real estate owners to repurpose their buildings. Formerly office buildings, which were strictly offices and whatnot, are being repurposed to add condos or apartments or retail, as well as offices in the same building. Brick-and-mortar companies are starting to sell more online because they were not growing as fast as some of the online. And then another unanticipated hiccup from employment-related issues is there's a surge in cybersecurity claims because employees are working remotely. Cyber extortion, where if you click on something and they may encrypt all the data for the entire corporation unless you pay a ransom to unencrypt it. That is called a crypto lock. And at the same time, the same perpetrators of these crimes are mining that data, finding some sensitive issues, and doing a back-end extortion. If you don't pay us a certain ransom, we're going to release this to the public. There's social engineering claims where you get an email or a text message or something instructing you to move money or information to another location or another website or another email address. And we saw a surge in those claims. There's downtime and loss of income or business interruption arising from cyber disruptions. And companies are paying just to upgrade the homes for allowing people to work remotely. So all of this has led to an increased cost in insuring those cyber extortion, as well as employment practices liability insurance.
Business risks brought about by COVID-19. Bill Holden shares his thoughts. This is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. And Bill, on the employment-related risks and companies adjusting, are you finding that this is primarily hitting all states, or is there more concentration in California, on the East Coast? Or are we really pretty much seeing these risks showing up across the country?
I think they're certainly happening across the country. I think a lot of the lawsuits are happening in certain states that seem to be more prone to litigation. California leads the charge. I often joke that the state sport is suing one another, but California is the first state to find the largest employment-related claims. And in fact, Los Angeles, Ventura, and Orange County have results 4 times worse than anywhere else. But other states throughout the entire United States are having the same kind of employment-related problems. You watch the news, you could see what was happening in New York or Florida or Texas, and concerns about people going back to work or people wanting to go back to work and having to wear masks and bring lawsuits associated with those.
And regarding in moving towards changing the subject and moving a little bit towards the supply chain disruption risk, how is that coming to and affecting businesses? The causes, the results of this being an outcome of the pandemic?
Mike, I think that's an excellent question. Certainly the pandemic has contributed to the supply chain disruptions, and you can't pick up the newspaper or turn on the television news without seeing some story involving supply chain disruptions. COVID has impacted these disruptions because there's concerns about shipping and or receiving products because you're not sure where they came from. There are a number of food processing companies, for example, out of the Midwest, and meat packers, where somebody would get COVID and they'd have to recall tons of meat as a result. But I think COVID is only one of the issues. I think there are geopolitical tensions. We're seeing the problems arise out of the Russia-Ukraine incidents that in the war that seems to have started. And Russia supplies 10% of the oil to Europe, and there's going to be issues and supply chain problems around that. There's cyber. Last year, CNA insurance company got hit with a cyber extortion, and they were fundamentally shut down for about 2 weeks. And certainly the Colonial Pipeline was crippled by a cyber extortion. Colonial Pipeline transports about 2.5 million barrels of gasoline per day and represents about 45% of East Coast gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel consumption. All of that contributed to the supply chain disruption. There are trade disruptions. Organizations that won't work with foreign companies or countries that won't work with each other because of the concerns arising out of COVID and the environmental issues. I don't know if you've done any building lately, but the cost of wood because of wildfires and hurricanes and other natural disasters has increased dramatically. I think for those of us who live near deep water ports, if you could see 20 miles up where you'd see lines of tankers, super tankers, who have products that they want to bring into the United States that because of COVID they've been unable to unload, or that we've been trying to ship to foreign ports and unable to get them. Certainly there's shortage of workers on the docks who are willing or capable of unloading as a result of COVID, and the work shortages have caused that problem. But it's even hard to get them through customs, because customs have to make sure that products are COVID-free and safe, and they have a shortage of customs workers who can do it. And once you clear customs, their truckers are having a shortage. I read a report recently that showed there were 80,000 needed just to transport goods. This is much of a reaction to the COVID issues. So it even gets down to stacked shelves with these. And I think this has led to some of the, people buying huge amounts of toilet paper or water or other hoarding type of issues. It certainly rose during the COVID. I read recently an article called The Business Costs of Supply Chain Disruption by DEP, which is a market-leading provider of SaaS-based procurement software and supply chain software. And they were talking about some of the reactions as a result of COVID and the supply chain disruption. Businesses are forced to operate smaller organizations or change what they do and adapt to the pandemic. And deliveries are taking longer, inventory shortages, and certain trade credit claims are on the rise. If you can't bring the products in and clear them in customs, you start to build up accounts receivable. Or if you sell these products, they can't get sold. You start to build up accounts receivable, and this leads to trade credit insurance claims. I think these are arising out of the pandemic, supply chain disruption, and they're certainly contributing to the inflation rate.
I'm chatting with Bill Holden on COVID-19 business risks, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Bill, for the risks created by the supply chain disruptions, do you see the risks abating? Is there kind of a cooling off happening that you can identify, or are we still really at this fever pitch level?
I think it ebbs and flows, Mike. I think if you looked at it initially, people were hoarding again, and stores had shelves that were barren of products if you went to the grocery store. Once we got through the initial lockdown period and some states started to open up a little bit, you saw some of the supply chain disruption start to recede. I think as the Delta variant arose, it started to rise again. We had more supply chain disruptions relating or arising out of the COVID environment. And then it started to ebb again. And then the Omicron variant hit. And I think all of this contributes. But I also think, as I said before, they're geopolitical, they're natural disasters, and there's certainly other factors leading to it, not the least of which is a shortage of workforce arising out of the COVID. So it ebbs and flows.
And Bill, for company transparency, and what are some of the risks there that you're seeing?
Some management are required to do certain things in order to comply with the business judgment rule, the duty of diligence, the duty of obedience, the duty of loyalty. And probably during the Enron fiascos, a fourth, albeit unstated duty, the duty of transparency arose. And I think, if anything, the pandemic has shown a greater need for organizations, for board members and for management to be transparent about what is going on in the organization in order to let the shareholders know, let the investment community know, let the creditors know, so they can run their business. They have to make decisions on behalf of these, but it creates a lot of uncertainty. One of the initial ones, I think, was the PPP monies, the Paycheck Protection Program. A lot of questions arose from creditors about the PPP program. Were you taking the money? Were you a small business or a larger business that happened to get the money? And was that forgiven? Ultimately, all of them are going to be forgiven, but it was a huge concern for a long time. Employment safety issues, particularly for first responders or necessary employment, hospitals and whatnot, they had to provide safe workplaces, mask mandates, vaccine mandates. As the make these decisions, they have to be transparent with their investors and their stakeholders so that they can really run their business. But I also think other issues have risen. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. Or governance is something that has been around for a long time. Do you have the practices and procedures in place to run the business well? And it gives you, may not keep you out of court, but it certainly gives you a paper defense. But certainly during the pandemic, there's been a greater interest by investors and by stakeholders that not only does the board invest and believe and perform with ESG, but they are walking their talk. They just can't say, we are a company, a green company, but if they find that they've invested in an organization that has known pollution issues, they're going to get called out on it. And certainly PG&E has been one of those. There were 53 class actions filed under COVID-related issues since it all started 2 years ago. Of the 2021 cases filed that are COVID-related securities class action, 50% of the defendants were technology service economic sector, and 25 were health technology sector. The 2020 cases were somewhat different. Only 15% of the defendants were in the technology space, while 21% were in the finance. So there's been a migration and a shift in who is being held responsible on transparency for COVID-related issues. There's a great amount of attention on how management is treating their staff. Are they being fair? Are they mandating safety and masks and whatnot? As I said earlier, there were 4,200 employment-related claims in 2020 alone on these issues. And some of the issues are even looking at, you know, is the board or are the senior management getting great bonuses while other members of the entire staff are having to take pay cuts or not getting raises. One of the things I see when I'm surfing the internet every so often is how one large organization that has probably flourished brilliantly since the pandemic is now paying all their workers at least $15 an hour, which is more than the minimum wage, and even more in higher cost living areas. So companies are starting to make sure that they do walk the talk. Boards are going to be forced to prepare and be a lot more transparent, not only about how they're treating the people, environmental, social, and governance issues, but also about their cyber exposures, and particularly because of the shift in how people are working as a result of the pandemic. So I think transparency and the resulting litigation against boards is really a change that has been massive since the pandemic started.
Bill, for listeners to learn more, how can they contact you?
I am very easy to reach. My email address is bholden, B-H-O-L-D-N, at libertycompany.com. And my telephone number is 818-444-8414. I'm more than happy to talk to anybody who is interested in these or any other types of COVID-related or social changes that are leading to basically paradigm shifts in risk.
Bill, thanks so much for the conversation today, and we'll see how these business risks unfold.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to any other questions that may arise.
Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io, powered by InfoGen Labs, Inc. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to the Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on the Anderson Files.